Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat. They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland sports leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody.
Well, to show you my lack of musical knowledge, Dusty correctly pointed out that Lotto song is the big D energy song.
Sound it out. Well, say it slowly. We don't need another one this week.
Swag's not paying attention.
Swag's
either.
Also not listening, so don't say anything controversial.
But that's what the song is. I didn't know it was that song until he said that. I'm like, oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Lato or Lotto. I don't know how to say her name.
Lato.
But I know the song. It's in my golf playlist. You got like a 168 iron in there? I'll give you that energy.
I would think the 205 with a 5-iron is more the energy there.
That's more energy.
A 168 is your energy?
I'm just throwing out random numbers here.
What are you swinging with a 168?
I've lost some of my power over the years.
I'm probably going 7-iron because I want to be short with a roll-up.
168, I'm still hitting an 8-iron. 170 is my cutoff. Over 170, I'll go light 7, but if I'm upper 160s, it's an 8-iron for me.
What if I told you front pin?
Is it still 160, though?
Yeah, 168.
Yeah, I'm still hitting an 8-iron.
Okay.
I'm still, yeah. You know what you need in that
swing. I need more.
You need that BDE.
You need to play that song for me on the course.
You get that BDE.
I thought a nice smooth 7 would do it. Maybe a little rollback.
Let's talk about our golf game, shall we? I also like swinging harder than I do softer. I trust myself more to swing harder than I do softer.
Oh, yeah. When you take off
like
tempo,
I'm trying to take it off, it just
time.
Screws everything
yeah,
up.
I agree.
I'd rather just, you know.
Do a normal swing.
Let's let the big dog eat here. See if we can get it there. All right.
You ever topped a ball, though, where it just literally goes in the ground and comes up to your head?
That's happened, yeah.
Yeah, that's happened.
Wait for the green to clear. This thing's going to go 4 feet. All right. Now I'm that jackass. Everybody's looking at you like, really? 225 out, huh? Hit it 6 feet, dude. Just had to wait around for 10 minutes while they putted.
That's awesome.
Now the hole's empty. Speaking of golf, I will get to this quickly just because it's fascinating to me. We knew it was going to happen because there was a report that came out a couple weeks ago that it was going to happen, and now it has officially happened. Saudi Arabia's public investment fund has pulled all of its money for LIV Golf after the year.
Well, there's a war going on. So.
Yeah, they got a bit of a bigger issue out there. There's also, like, they're going to use this as the force majeure to get out of their contracts. It's a legal term to not pay. They're going to say, well, this unforeseen circumstance transpired. Because a lot of these guys sign multi-year deals to go to LIV. Like, they're under contract for 2 more years. And so if you want to go file a lawsuit in Saudi Arabia, you can. Have fun with that, Phil Mickelson. You're going to come back without any limbs on your body.
Right.
So none of them probably will, but they're going to use the war as the pre-context for the reason for shutting this down and their funding down. When also in reality, like, do you know how much money they spent over the last 5 years? Over $5 billion on LIV Golf. And I will ask you this.
They spent $5 billion?
When you talk about the,
yeah, I guess
the
putting
courses,
on tournaments, yeah,
tournaments
you're right.
They were giving out $500 million to John Rahm.
Yeah.
They probably gave Phil $500 million. It's $1 billion right there just for two players.
Yeah.
What did they accomplish?
Oh, nothing. I want to give credit here, and it's not something you and I haven't like kind of said or talked about on the show. But
it's this idea like they're going to use the war as a pre-context when also in the back of their mind, it's like we've spent $5 billion for 5 years and we've gotten literally nothing out of this.
When you have an infinite amount of money, I know you're going through a war in your area, but like also don't act like you can't just get through it still and be fine.
I mean, you could, but also at some point, how many years are you okay just wasting billions of dollars until you're like, dude, there's no return on the investment?
One of the more popular NFL people out there is Kevin Clark. Who I quite enjoy. I consume his content. I think he's a great interviewer. He does a good job covering the NFL.
Yeah.
He also is a golf nerd.
Yes.
And he tweeted this yesterday. And he said, outside of my family and job, there's nothing on earth I speak to people more about than golf. In the last 5 years, I do not think anyone has ever brought up something that happened on LIV. Not one thing. It never justified its own existence. Put it differently, there has been a massive golf boom in this country, and basically everyone in the sport is having success except the people who spent the most money to do so.
Yes, because it was never a strategy that was going to work. The only one that I would contend, and I was never a LIV guy, I never watched it, I didn't care about it, it never interests me in any way, shape, or form as a fan. The only one that ever cut through the noise machine was the Anthony Kim win. when he won and after all the years of struggle that he went through and the ups and downs, and he came back and won that tournament, that was the only time. Now, it happened in the middle of the night because it was in, like, Singapore, so nobody was watching it live. But you woke up to the announcement and the highlights were all over the place the next day. That was the only time I could ever tell you a winner of a live event.
Yeah.
That, at the week of the tournament, he won? That's pretty crazy. That's the only time it's ever popped through my bubble of sports.
I would say the only other thing that's popped through my bubble is, like, it's the stuff they probably didn't want us to care about or consume.
Yes.
So, like, wearing shorts. Like, oh, they wear shorts? That's kind of cool. I wish the PGA would kind of allow guys to do that, but I also understand why they don't. Bryson DeChambeau withdrawing for a tournament in Mexico because the conditions are unfair.
Because he's playing your local muni and he's hitting off of a dirt patch.
Oh, it made me feel so good to see him mad about that. I'm like, yeah, dude, I've been saying this for years.
Welcome to Portland Golf, Bryson. We deal with this every other hole.
And now you wonder why I double bogey.
Do you see the sand traps I'm hitting out of here?
This sand isn't even moving.
This
it's rock
mud.
Hard.
It's clay.
Caught it clean. She gone. So it's basically like that. Like, that's the stuff that nothing about the actual,
like, events or league. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or maybe you or Joe Fisher. Yeah, Greg Norman threw beer at us at Pumpkin Ridge. Like, other
sure.
than that,
yeah.
nothing, dude.
Nothing ever
what
cut
a waste
through.
Of money.
It really is sad because the only, and I remember you brought this up a couple weeks ago, and I know others have as well, that the idea that it pushed the PGA Tour a little bit more into the future could be the one positive that you could focus on.
I do think it was good for the PGA.
No
in that,
doubt.
In that
of
that
like,
regard.
We can't be so controlling and we have to listen to more of what the players want and let's, you know, modernize the tour a little bit. Like, there are some definite positives, I think, that have come out in that regard for the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
It just, you'll look back on it as this era that rifted the game at a moment where the game is, like, when COVID happened, the only thing anybody could do was play golf essentially outside.
Oh, I missed the foam sticks.
The foam cups.
Let me just
like,
hit it and
we couldn't
good.
Do anything. Everything was shut down. You're just like, what do you want to do? You want to go play golf? Okay, let's go play golf. Like, offices were shut down. Everybody was working from home. Like, everybody played golf in COVID.
Do you remember how nervous, maybe you weren't, but like, I had a couple times at the very beginning, it was like being afraid to even like touch the same area as somebody.
Like a rake at the same time or something.
Yeah,
like a,
something yeah. stupid. You're like, wait, why do I care about this?
Remember they took the ball washers out? Like, yeah.
I do remember
These are the hives for COVID.
Well, didn't they initially let us have it go into the cup, and then they were like, well, you can't touch the same surface area,
I think it was
so
something,
let's do the foam.
Yeah, they were finding ways for the state to allow them to be open, and they were just making bank left and right.
Yeah.
But people, like, the game has grown a ton in popularity. The ratings have been really strong on the PGA Tour.
Try to book a tee time this weekend.
Exactly. Like, for
good
an 80-degree
luck.
Day, you got to do this stuff a week or two yep. in advance. I was joking with somebody in East Moreland when I was there on Friday, because as I was paying for my 9 holes before the Blazer game, somebody called and was like, hey, you got anything available for tomorrow? And the lady just started laughing. She was like, no, we don't. And I just chuckled of like, yeah, if you want a public tee time, you got to book it 1 week or 2 weeks out. That's how popular the game is.
Or go alone because it's a one or two person availability.
Exactly. And I look back on the unfortunate side of it mainly is the legacies that I'm curious to see how they transpire from here. Like, some guys are fine because they don't care about it and their legacies weren't that important to begin with. Dustin Johnson is a good example of this. Like, the guy's, he's had a good life. He's married to a Gretzky, does a lot of drugs. He's rich. He's fine. Like, he's done. But guys like Phil, who were such a figurehead atop the PGA Tour for so long and so beloved by so many golf fans, turning his back and all the negativity that was created and this thing folds 5 years in. Is there anybody worse than John Rahm in this case? The guy who was adamantly anti-live. I don't need the money. I care about pageantry and tradition. Mm-hmm. This is ludicrous. I would never do it. To then flipping and say, I am going to do it. And I am. Remember when he showed up on Fox News with his Liv Letterman jacket?
I do.
To announce his signing?
Yep.
And then last year, they announced the pathway back on the PGA Tour. They gave it to Brooks Koepka. They gave it to Patrick Reed. That offer was on the table for John Rahm, and he turned it down last year.
And you could tell Bryson wants to be done with it.
Yes,
he
wants out.
Left.
I mean, he's threatening to go play YouTube golf, which, no, you're not, dude. You're going to play on a sanctioned tour. Shut the hell up, Bryson. Use your stupid 3D-printed 5 irons and go play on the PGA Tour. But I don't know if anybody's legacy, like where he was winning a couple of majors and the ascension that he had in the game of golf.
He was rivaling Scheffler.
To completely turning his back on everything he had said about leaving the tour, and now it crumbles 4 years in.
Yeah.
And he can laugh at the bank all day. He's going to get a chunk of that money. I don't know how much he'll end up seeing because they're not going to pay it all out going forward. But his legacy will never be the same. And that's a damn shame because he was a rising superstar in the sport.
I tend to agree with you. You can certainly say what you want about Phil. Phil had already, I think, created a reputation for himself, and then that was just kind of the
swinger and an insider
cake.
Trader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is he wearing shades all the time? There's some weird stuff going on, but at least to Swag's point off the in the commercial break, like he at least had a PGA championship at 50, which is insane. He'll eventually, I don't know if he'll be like super welcome back open arms.
I mean, nobody knows where he is right now anyways. He's been away from golf for a year.
He'll be back in the game in 10 years. You know,
I just, the way he tarnished the PGA Tour, I'm just curious if they are really, do they need him? Do you welcome him back?
Here's why. He matters too much to the history of the game. That's a big deal for them. It's a respect thing.
Yeah, I see that point.
What, he went three Masters?
Three Masters, six major championships. Yeah. Like,
I get it, but he also, like, that wasn't just, I'm leaving and I want a payday. He took a dump all over them.
He did.
Repeatedly.
Yeah, but you can move on in 10 years. John Rahm is just like, will fans ever get back on board with John Rahm? And I'm going to tell you right now, I was a big John Rahm guy.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to go the Rory route when this stuff started, and he just randomly, it came out, he's leaving to live. And I'm like, after saying all what you said?
He publicly killed it constantly.
I'm done. And anytime he loses, I'm rooting against him, dude. I will never root for John Rahm again.
It's wild to see the PGA Tour now be in a position where they have all of these guys by the balls, and there's reports coming out that all of their agents are already calling the PGA Tour. But they said, hey, we gave you a pathway last year, and you said no. Brooks and Patrick Reed were the only two that said yes. Pat Perez, I think, is now on the senior tour, so he went that route.
Yeah,
so a handful of the older guys have.
There were two guys that were eligible for the Champions Tour. No, I think if the PGA had their druthers, what they'd love to do...
Send them all to Q School, dude.
Go to the Corn Ferry Tour.
The Corn Ferry Tour.
If they put them on the Corn Ferry Tour, and you want to draw some attention to those events and get some people out there to
those... It's a brilliant idea. Yeah. Or go play on the DP World Tour if you want. Go play in Europe. Yeah. But if you want to play over here at the PGA Tour... Earn your card the way everybody else did.
Earn your card back.
I would love if they did that. But just a fascinating day in the world of golf. They shut it down yesterday. They're trying to pretend as if we got these independent investors. Like, dude.
It's a really odd position they're taking because if we don't know, all their money was stripped away. It's like, who's going to make up for that?
I mean, they said this a couple weeks ago. They were like, remember the commissioner came out and did an interview. He's like, well, actually, no, we're fine. We're fine until the end of the year. And then earlier this week, they shut down their event in New Orleans. And they're like, well, it doesn't really work on the calendar. It's like, no, it's because you don't have any money anymore. It's lost $5 billion in 5 years. Who would possibly invest in that?
They didn't have an emergency meeting in New York to say, we're going through the end of the year. It was, hey, we're done.
LIV Golf, what a moment in time. I still have my credential from the Pumpkin Ridge event. I was there.
Selling on eBay.
Was that the very first one?
No.
I don't think it was the first, but it was pretty early.
Was that the first in the United States?
Might have been.
I think it was the first in the United States.
Did that hurt Pumpkin? Did they lose members over that?
It was very controversial.
It was controversial because it was the parent company that operated it or owned it.
It also,
I don't know if it's changed hands because of that.
We still cared about the journalist who was murdered.
Yeah, who was hacked apart by a bone saw.
We don't care anymore. No, but at that point, we cared, so it was a big deal.
Or funding 9/11. You know, who's keeping track here? All right, there you go. LIV Golf, RIP. We never knew you. Let's get to a couple of nuggies out of the college football world. One small tweak that's coming that I am a fan of. Also a mock that highlights, man, this is really the most talented maybe we've ever seen. We'll get to those next on The Fan. Well, the conversation about expanding the college football playoff will never go away. I'm sure we'll end up with 24 at some point this offseason. 8-4 Arizona, come on down.
I think Pate is kind of telling us without saying it. And maybe he said it, and if he did, I apologize. But I think him doing it the amount of times he's done it of the 24 team, he's kind of hearing that it's probably going that direction.
The Big Ten's going to get their wish. That's what they wanted all along. I don't think 24 is necessary. I do think you lose some of the sanctity of the regular season. I will still watch. I'll still follow. But for programs like mine in particular, like a 24-team playoff takes so much of the edge off of games. Like right now, you still have it. Like Oregon lost the Indiana game about the halfway point of the season, I want to say, game five or game six,
somewhere there.
Then you had the Iowa game on the road, and then there was USC, and then there was Washington. When you looked at the standings, you're like, they might be it as a two-loss team, but it's also not guaranteed because your best win was Penn State, and Penn State cratered. Mm-hmm. So every single one of those games you're coming out of the wire like, you got to find a way to win it. And if you go to a 24-team playoff, I'm not saying you don't want to win. I'm not saying I won't watch. That certainly is not the case. I will watch every second of it. But it does take a little bit of that edge off, if you will, when you need a fourth quarter drive, as opposed to like, dang it, that sucks. Now instead of being the 5 seed, we're going to be the 13 seed in a 24-team playoff.
Yeah, what do you think about the idea that somebody had tagged us. It was one of our P1s, Tyler, and it was, I think it was Pate, coincidentally, talking about the NFL draft and how 48% of the guys drafted had been transfers.
Yeah, huge number.
Huge number. Mm-hmm. And he was like basically using that as a measurement that the popularity of the sport was going down.
Yeah, I just disagree with the premise.
He said the TV ratings don't indicate that because of the highest they've ever been, but that's not the barometer here. And it's basically fans don't feel emotional. Like, let's just use Bo Nix, top of my head, right?
Sure.
Let's use Bo Nix. Bo Nix gets drafted, or Mendoza, it doesn't matter. When they get announced, who they get announced from what school? It's the last one they played for. It's not the one maybe you think of when you think of the player.
Right.
Like, I think Duck fan legitimately does claim Bo Nix because he had his two best years of his college career were at Oregon.
Not to the level of Mariota or Herbert, but they definitely do.
Yeah, it's a big deal, right? Mendoza now. He just won a national championship at Indiana. Where did he play before there?
Started for 3 years at Cal.
Yeah, and Cal's like, glad Indiana gets that credit, not us.
That was our guy, man.
You just stole him and you played him for a year. Like, it is a weird thing. I don't know if I also agree with that premise because of how popular it is. From a TV standpoint,
sure,
and I don't think it changes anything for me as a fan. I'd say that about the 2014 expansion playoff too. Like,
doesn't change the vibe when you're watching a big game.
No, yeah. I mean, I think I've been making this one point that hasn't changed for me since they talked about the 4-team playoff. We will always care about the games.
No doubt about it.
We watch NFL teams be 11-6. Your team loses their fifth game of the season. Do you suddenly stop caring about the regular season?
No, of course not.
No, now you start to think about playoff seeding. Where are they at? Who could they play? How is this shaking out? I really don't think that's going to be that much different. It's going to be a change. It's definitely different for college football fans that aren't diehard NFL fans.
Right.
But for somebody like me, I'm just going to be like, yeah, I'm not stoked about having a four-loss team in the top, you know, the 2014 playoff. But also, We see football be football all the time, and teams lose stupid ways and stupid games.
All the time.
I'm just kind of conditioned by the NFL to say, oh, the team that lost three times in the playoff, I'm not going to suddenly stop watching the regular season.
I don't think that's the argument, and I think that's a bad faith argument to act like people won't watch the games anymore. It's more about, like, because I will admit, as a fan, there are times, it's not often, but the main one that hits me is conference championship weekend now. Like, watching two teams that I both know are in the playoff play, I'd watch.
I feel like that will...
It doesn't have any impact.
The SEC's already talking about... I saw a bunch of comments from Kirby and Saban and stuff talking about the SEC doing away with the championship game. I don't know if they'll go to play... Yeah, if it goes to...
It'd be for this.
Yeah.
If you go to a 2014, you have to get rid of it.
No more
regular season conference
champions. The one byproduct that has to happen at that point is no more cupcakes in your non-conference. There's no reason. If you can't...
Not even one or two, just as like ramp-up time. I hate it, but I also understand.
Everybody should follow the SEC rule. I think that you play... The SEC, I'll give them credit. It was the non-conference games they finally got to, but they're also mandating everybody plays one Power 5 or 4 non-conference game.
I think
you can't do what Indiana's
you
doing.
Can't
cupcakes
play,
and a decent opponent.
You absolutely can't play FCS teams anymore.
I'm all for that. Those games are stupid and meaningless, and they shouldn't exist.
I'm with you there.
And they're a health hazard, to be honest with you.
Well, it's not great for the history of sports, right? Oregon State fan doesn't want to talk about Sacramento State.
No. So if
Eastern
that goes
Washington
away,
did not happen. All right.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see your point, and I'm not trying to argue that the regular season will matter anymore because I do think that's a bad faith argument.
I'm
just
wrong on this.
Just wondering, like, if you like one thing that's always been unique about college football that I will acknowledge is the edge that you feel with what's at stake, right? Like, if a regular season game feels like, man, if you lose this, can you overcome it? Can you run the table the rest of the way? Like, you can feel that sense of pressure and urgency on a game. And we will obviously still watch because it's football. We love football, and I will never stop watching football. But it's the idea of, like, Georgia and Alabama playing, and the losers, it doesn't have the same ramifications that it used to.
It doesn't.
I guess is the argument. So do you lose that edge watching the second half of the game? And it's, oh, my God, Alabama beat Georgia at Georgia. But the response, well, all right, they're going to go 10-2 and be in the playoff anyways. Who cares?
But we're already bordering, not counting Clemson, we're already bordering on teams now in this model with three losses that we argue about. And then you get people that, whether they're bad faith actors or not, they get on television and they say, it's ridiculous Texas isn't in. Why is it Texas' fault? They played Ohio State. Why are we punishing them? And it's like, well, they played Florida and got housed.
They did.
I saw that happen.
And both things can be true.
But you're already to that. And so, like, all I'm pointing out is, again, not super stoked of all the teams that are probably going to make it. You're going to have a lot of bad games that are irrelevant, but sure. I would argue that's what bowl games have become in my life. So if you tell me there's some stakes that matter a little more than seeing Tony the Tiger, I'm totally cool with it.
3-0?
Still think a Pop-Tart Bowl should be a playoff game. That's I will never get off that hill.
End debate.
But I, as much as I agree with you of, let's say it's Oregon-USC.
Right, and they're playing in week 9, and each team's undefeated, and it's like, well, bragging rights are great.
Bragging rights are kind of like still a thing, though. Ohio State can lose the Michigan game and win the title, but that fan base still feels very uncomfortable and weird to brag to Michigan's fan base because they couldn't beat them, and it was a losing streak. So
right.
I still think you carry it. I also understand your point, and I think a lot of college football fans' points of Bama can beat Georgia, and it matters for the week after. But then we'll just move on and say, well, it is what it is.
They'll still be 10-2 and be an 11 seed.
Yeah.
Or a 9 seed.
But I would say this, like, as right as that might be, if Bama loses to Texas, do you think this guy is going to suddenly not call in and say this?
Wake the hell up.
We do this in the NFL. Listen to Philly Sports Radio when the Eagles are 2-1.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And it's like,
people freak out, sky's falling.
None of this is going to work. It's awful.
Fire the coach.
Bench hurts. He's a bum. And then he wins his next two games. I think we got it, guys. I think we got it. Like, that's what sports is. We do this with the Blazers. They play 82 of these games. And we're like, coming up next, the Blazers have lost 5 of 6. And suddenly, 27-21. How are we feeling out there? And people will text in, it's over. They're awful. They can't do it. And then they'll go on a run. Like, it's just, that's sports. We're not going to completely lose that, I don't think.
I think that's a good point. I'd be curious to see how it plays out. I do agree with Swag's ultimate take. Like, if it makes the regular season more interesting from a matchup standpoint, then some of the fear that I have about the games not having the edge goes away. If you give me week in and week out marquee games because being 9-3 is now the new quote-unquote good season, I am all for that. There are games on Oregon's schedule every year that I just legitimately I watch them, and I'm curious how the backup players will play in the second half, your young pieces.
But you, like, get those against your conference opponents. You can't eliminate
that. No doubt, and you can't avoid those, but you can try to avoid them the best you can in non-conference.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a Swag's point on FCS, like, what are we doing here?
We're funding programs to
exist. We're funding FCS programs, and I love FCS
football. If
you
want to play in FCS, go do that for your spring game.
Yeah, here's $50,000. We'll come play him.
Yeah, until your guy gets an ACL injury, and we're like, why are we scrimmaging Weber State?
One, by the way, quick tweak that will happen this year, it sounds like. So they had their CFP meetings last week. That's where a lot of this stuff's coming out of. Small tweak that I didn't really know wasn't a thing, or maybe I should have known. I don't know. But Greg Sankey, I guess, on Feinbaum yesterday said that starting this year, they have decided that both the 1 and the 2 seed will get to pick their locations.
I love that.
For the first round.
That's cool.
Now, it used to be where the ones, they would base them off of traditional bowl ties, was the way it used to work in the past, I believe. And so basically the 1 seed will have his pick of, okay, here are your quarterfinal locations. We want to play here. And then the 2 seed will get the second pick. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes semifinals, the 1 seed will get to pick which semifinal they want to play in if they win their first playoff game. So from a geography standpoint, like, we just went through Oregon, who wasn't one of the top seeds, but they had to play in Miami and then Atlanta in their first two games. Mm-hmm. And if they would have won that game, they would have gone back to Miami. Now, maybe if you are one of the top 2 seeds, you get a more, we want to play in Arizona and L.A., or you get to choose your locations. I think that helps a little bit.
I think home site games are a bigger deal in conversation than it is the expansion of the playoff.
Without a doubt, if you get that throughout the first couple of rounds.
Just not having to make fans travel to 4 different cities
can't
that are
it, man.
Stupid expensive.
Can't afford it.
Versus maybe you get to drive to your rival's town because they're hosting, and you're hosting yourself, so you just get to go to your home game.
It's never too early for this for next year in one program, man. They have a chance to make history according to this guy. I'll tell you how many and what I mean next. Well, it's never too early. It's kind of like the right after the national championship game, you get the way too early top 25 for next year that I always love and read.
I'm enjoying that it's not too early to say the Jets are making the playoffs for people.
Oh, baby.
They had a draft. I don't know.
Do you see they might sign Russell Wilson to be their backup? And a Seahawk fan made one of the funniest tweets I've seen in a while, said, Geno and Russ being the Jets 1 and 2 quarterbacks while Sam Darnold is the Super Bowl winning Seattle Seahawks quarterback is a really funny world to live in. Great point. Russell Wilson, by the way, also looked kind of fat at Savannah Bananas game the other day. He showed up looking a little portly.
He was at a Savannah banana game?
I guess. I don't know if I got butt cracked in this regard, but there was a video of a guy that, no, that somebody said was Russell Wilson. He looked portly.
Things that,
as
yeah,
a fat,
he was
I know fat.
Participating
really?
In
that
it
guy's
in
fat.
Some capacity. I don't know what.
I mean, he's always kind of hovered on the.
He's been large and in charge. I get that. But this looked like a boiler.
Mr. Unlimited.
Like, dude, I get your playing days.
Do
probably
you care
over?
Anymore when you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, somebody's going to pay
him.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, he had an at-bat.
He had an at-bat, and it was like, whoa, dude. You look like Pablo Sandoval circa 2013, one of the fat panda years.
Dude, that's...
Yeah.
Whoa. Is that Russell Wilson?
I don't know. I thought it was.
Because that jersey ain't tight, and you're still seeing a lot there.
Maybe I'm getting butt cracked. I don't know. Let's run with it. He's fat.
But
it's never too early for the early mock drafts of next year. I love those. Right after the draft's over, we get the immediate 2027 mock drafts from everybody involved. One of the most inaccurate things, by the way, that is happening. I love it. It's interesting draft note, by the way, before I get to the mock of next year.
I have 28 mock if you want it.
I got it. That's what I'm going to get to here. The Ravens GM came out. I thought it was interesting. He went on a rant about the consensus of how wrong sometimes media consensus can be from team consensus.
It seemed to be a big takeaway this year because the mocks were super wrong.
Super wrong. And it's a reminder to, like, it's fun to read, sure, but they also don't really know what they're talking about. And he used examples from last year where he said there were players who they had because they run analytics and probabilities of what are the chances this guy's going to be here in the fourth round, right?
Yep.
And they look at all the consensus mocks out there and put all the information in their algorithms that they can, and it'll tell you, oh, there's a decent chance this guy's there in the fifth round, but the team boards are different from the consensus boards. And he said there were a lot of guys last year that ended up getting drafted where they had them rated, not where the consensus mocks had them going, and it cost them the chance to get players that they wanted to go get. And so I thought that was a very interesting look at, we are ripping teams apart based on draft picks for media consensus mocks when it's much different than what team can. It doesn't mean one's right or wrong. It's just an interesting strategy of, you didn't agree with what our mock draft was, therefore you had a bad draft.
Well, that's kind of been my whole takeaway, is like, I like certain guys that teams like the Browns and the Jets got, but they also operate the way they operate. And so I'm sitting here going, I don't know how in love and with it I am. Not that those players aren't good, but it's more like, what team will they be good for after the team they were drafted by? The killing of a team over how they draft or who they draft. I see this with my team. I see this with a lot of teams. Like, when you get draft grades.
Yes.
My favorite is the draft grades from the non-NFL draft people. Like, if you tell me Dane Brugler, or Matt Miller, they want to do, hey, this is my draft grades based on who I thought, where I thought, when I thought, and then he goes down the teams. Dude, I'll read that. I won't always maybe agree, or we don't know if they'll be right. We have to wait and see on it. But if you're a general NFL guy for a website that I've never seen do mock stuff, and then you're like,
grades and stuff.
My draft grades, and it's like, based on what, man? You're just stealing other people's information and then grading out how you want?
Yeah.
For clicks? I mean, I just think all of it's a bit ridiculous. I think we get really worked up. And it's not that teams don't miss. They
of course they
do.
Every GM is going to miss.
It's like, what I would ask people is, what do you want your general manager? If you don't like your general manager, then you're never going to like anything.
No.
But if you aren't sure, or you're in the middle of the road, or you like your general manager, and he goes for a player that you deem a quote-unquote reach.
Yeah, I had him going in the fifth. He took him in the third.
Right. I had him almost undrafted. He took him in the fourth or the third. What do you want him to do? Not take the player he evaluated that he really likes?
Right.
I find it to be a bit of an odd position to take. And it's not that they're not right.
No.
It's that you kind of have to wait and see how it plays out. It's no different than the Dundon stuff.
Right. Let's just take a deep breath and check in 2 years, because all these bad draft picks might be an impact players. The most famous or infamous one of all time is the Seahawks draft grade getting a D. And they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
It was a D. And it was like, I remember, like, on the, they played the clip, Richard Sherman, and coincidentally it might have been Mel Kiper, or maybe
probably
it was Mortensen. Somebody. Yeah. Sherman got drafted in the fourth, and they're like,
I don't get this at all. He's a wide receiver.
He's a wide receiver converted to a DB. He's not very good.
Yeah, oops.
Hall of Fame guy.
Hall of Fame career. Yeah. You mentioned Dane Brugler there. Well, he has come out with his 2027 mock draft. All that to be said. We don't need to go pick by pick. I just found one note interesting here.
Mm-hmm.
So we mentioned going into the last draft. I thought Oregon had a chance to break it. They've never had more than two guys selected in the first round of the draft. I thought Pregnon had an outside shot at going in the first round. He fell all the way to the third round, so what the hell do I know?
Right.
But this year, I'm just going to go ahead and let you count the names here. So no, he has Arch going first overall to Arizona, Jeremiah Smith going second overall to Miami. Those are his first two picks. Number three overall to the Cleveland Browns, poor bastard, Dante Moore, Oregon.
Mm.
Okay, so that's one. Let's count them up together here.
By the way, Deshaun Watson, slightly ahead of Shador right now.
Oh, don't you worry. That's in my notes today. Number 10 overall to the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
Amari Washington, defensive tackle, Oregon. That's two. Number 13 overall to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jamari Johnson, tight end, Oregon. That's three overall.
I don't feel like we talked enough about how much of a freak I think he is.
He had an unbelievable year last year.
Kenyon Sadiq got it because he's wearing the way too small jersey and he's a little more cut with his muscles.
Agreed.
Johnson is insane.
Yes, he is. And he was hurt for the majority of spring last year, not even a participant. That's why he's kind of a late bloomer. 24th overall to the Philadelphia Eagles, Tatum Tuioti, edge rusher, Oregon.
Yeah.
That is four. And 27th overall to the San Francisco 49ers, Poncho Laululu, center.
We got a new center.
Oregon. According to Dane Brugler, as of right now, and we all know nothing is more accurate than an April 30th mock draft for next year's 2027 NFL draft.
Which is why we need to read it.
Which is why you need to read it. I just saw this the other day. I'm like, ah, it's curious where everybody's going. I'm like, wait a minute. He has five first-round picks for Oregon? Five first-round picks?
Yeah, but
I don't know if all those guys. Tatum, I don't think he'll be a first-round pick. Poncho.
Why do you think Tatum won't be? His size?
I don't think he's going to have the numbers to do it. I think Tatum has a chance to be a good NFL player. I just think when you're talking first-round picks, I hope I'm wrong there. I don't think him or Poncho, the other three, I would be shocked if they're not.
Well,
I think
Jamari, the first round's a crapshoot, too.
No doubt about it, but I think Jamari Johnson came on last year, and as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be great. I think Amari Washington has the chance to be the number one defensive tackle off the board this year. He's that talented, and we know how they feel about quarterbacks, and unless Dante Moore drops off the face of a cliff, he was going to be the second overall pick this year. And so I don't see him dropping off next year, and so he will be a first-round pick. So I still think you're going to set the franchise record. It was just another eye-opener of like, oh, that's how talented this Oregon team potentially could be.
Well,
that's not even mentioning Mateo or some of the other guys.
Right. I look at Oregon and I'm kind of like, I hear what you're saying. If that happens next year, we'll talk about it. I don't know like the shock value because I think what Dan Lanning and Mario, to his point at the end, they've developed an environment and program that like when that happens, it's not shocking to me anymore.
Five first round picks would be shocking. Overall draft picks is not, in the first round? You've never had three?
I know, but that it's only shocking because it's never happened. It's not shocking on the talent profile.
How many times has a team had five guys go in the first round in the history of college football?
That's a great question. I imagine a Georgia team had it.
I would imagine,
team had it. Bama's probably
had it. Did one of those Miami U teams back in the day have it?
Miami, maybe Ohio State. But look where you recruit. You're recruiting with Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Bama,
I get it. Yeah.
Ohio State. That's the level of talent you've started to develop year in and year out. And so I'm not trying to diminish it.
Four times.
I'm just simply stating it's not going to be shocking to me based on how they've been recruiting.
Yeah.
Because that's the talent profile he has suddenly created.
The bigger takeaway might be if they don't win a title and they have five guys go in the first round of like, Jesus, missed that opportunity. Three times in the history of the sport. 2004 Miami had six guys go.
Good call.
2021 Alabama, six guys go. Mm-hmm. And that landing 2022 Georgia. Kirby Smart, George Deem.
That LSU title team in 19 didn't have it?
According to Google AI.
I guess five is a big strike.
Five is a big. I'm sure they had four, a couple of wide receivers and all that. Like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
By the way, one quick note, by the way, on the draft stuff, too. Oregon under Lanning, he has produced 31 draft picks in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Produced, people will probably be pissed by that word because a lot of them are transfers. But help their draft status. 4 years, 31 draft picks. And the 4 years before Lanning, they had 14 draft picks.
Mm.
So he's more than doubled it in his first 4 years. At Oregon, transfer portal helps tremendously.
Were out. It was bad timing. I still can't believe how undercared or talked about it was. They landed the number one quarterback in 27, and it kind of felt like it was just a note.
I think that's because of the transfer portal era of like, that's a big deal, but will he ever play?
Yeah, still the number one quarterback.
I'll take it, man. Give me all the five stars you want.
I think that's how used to talent you guys are.
I'm going to gobble them up. Yeah. Let's get to a couple of NFL nuggies, including one Sprague mentioned there. We'll do that next. Magic at top of the hour. Back after this on The Fam. Just a classic.
I think this dude's in solitary confinement right now because he was sending, I think, threatening messages via social media.
Who is he threatening? Carol Baskin, that bitch Carol Baskin. She at it again. At some point in my, I want to go back and watch that
I can't.
Again.
No, you don't.
I do.
Think you're going to be like, I can't believe we as a country thought this was it.
Dude, I watch a lot of stupid stuff.
You know who watches the dumbest
a lot
crap
of bad
is my mom.
Yeah.
My mom, dude, it is nothing but reality trash.
Yeah.
The only thing she watches that I never watched before and I finally did and then I'm like, oh, Love on a Spectrum. Have you seen this show?
I have not seen the show, but I've heard about
it. So these special needs kids are trying to find love.
It's people with autism, I think. And
basically, it's autistic kids, and it's very interesting to watch that because it's...
Seems like a...
It's a very wholesome way of life, though, in a lot of ways of just like they don't... It's not appearance. It's personality.
Right.
It's, you know, they got all their differences and whatnot. There was one gal that was just so super horny. And the guy would not
didn't want to do it.
Take her to the bone zone.
Yeah.
He had to dump her because he was uber religious.
He didn't want to do it.
And she was like, all I want to do is just be
all
horny.
I just want to be horny with
and
you.
And the mom had to console her and be like, I know you're super horny.
You can't.
But you can't. He doesn't want to. And he's just at the table and they're filming him and he's like crying because he wants to be horny. He is horny.
But he doesn't want to upset.
But he doesn't want
the
to
man in charge.
Upset God. Yeah, and then she's on the other end. She's crying. She's like, oh, I'm just really horny. And I'm just like, this poor girl. Love on a Spectrum.
I have not watched the show, but I have heard about it.
She'll find somebody.
She'll find somebody that's horny for her. You keep looking. You'll find somebody that's horny.
Somebody's
going to
be like,
you.
I'm not religious.
You got to match your level of freak, man. You know, keep looking until you find it.
Yeah.
Magic hack coming up in a moment. Let's get to a couple of NFL noogies. Is there any concern?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the latest updates out of Bo Nix and his ankle surgery?
Everything's great. He's probably ready to go.
No, he needed another one. They had to dive back into the ankle, procedure numero dos, and now this leads a lot of people.
Wasn't there a report that this was happening and they, like, came out
against
it?
This whole
it?
Thing has been weird.
It's
from
been
the get-go of Sean Payton and his comments about it and Bo coming out about it and I haven't been injured and you have been injured. The entire process has been strange to me. And there was, it got to a point where this is the world we live in now. A conspiracy theory took over online that this was the reason. Did you see the random tag designation the Steelers gave Rodgers the other day?
I did see that, yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but basically, like, they can
refuse. Basically, it means if he goes somewhere else, they get a compensation pick.
Right, or they have the ability to match, right? If somebody gives
something
them an
like
offer,
that.
They can match it or whatever. But this, it has gotten so far online that people think the Steelers did that because they're worried the Broncos might look for a one-year rental with Nix going under the knife again with his ankle. Now, is any of that true? How does it play out? I don't know.
Well, plus, you got the Peyton side story that's like, does he like him?
Yeah, I
know he's publicly been backing him, but they've had some stuff.
So he went in for a scheduled recheck. Mm. This came out a day or two ago. He went in back in to get his ankle checked, and he had to have a follow-up cleanup procedure on his ankle. And the Rappaport said, well, the team is expected to be conservative. His participation during the offseason program is not likely, but they're saying he's making strong
this
progress.
I mean, look, Steph went through this and then ended up being super okay. This stuff makes me so nervous if I'm a fan of this team.
Yes. Yes.
And you can say, well, this is standard protocol. Like, okay, but he didn't come in the league. One of the youngest players.
No, he was older. That was one of the concerns.
That's an area that, like, you know, you don't take a lot of big head hits anymore, but guess what gets wrapped up a lot? Your legs.
One of his strengths is what? His athleticism and ability to move in the pocket.
Well, I would argue that's been the biggest gift for him in the league is his improvising and movement of the pocket.
Yeah.
And if that gets taken away a little bit, you just worry, and you worry about him staying healthy, man. That's a bummer. I didn't see that note.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll end up being serious or not. I just know he had to go under the knife again, always concerning. And you mentioned it in the last segment. Are we ready? Come on down. Deshaun Watson. Again, your starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
Well, he's just
with the
narrowly.
First pick in the NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select.
What are we going to do if Deshaun gets back to Texans form and KC Concepcion is awesome and Denzel Boston's catching 7 passes for touchdowns?
If he looks like that, I will get a tramp stamp of your choosing.
On the record.
On the record.
Like a real one.
A real one. Your choosing.
Swag?
If he's at Pro Bowl level, 30 touchdowns, 6 picks, 4,000 yards, looks like that Deshaun Watson, he has legitimately one of the worst quarterback seasons we've ever seen in the history of the NFL.
He does.
And that happened 2 torn Achilles ago.
Swag, I think we get Omami Otani as a tramp stamp. in Dodger blue on the lower back. Why would you say that? Why would you make that?
Oh, mommy. Oh, Donnie.
Why would you say that?
That would be a great tramp stamp. No, that would actually be pretty funny. I'm not going to lie. I could never see. It's not going to bother me. What?
Could you imagine?
I wouldn't tell the wife, too. I'd just show up with it one
You're
day.
Like a Disney just World not even pool. Like, yeah. You're going to get Teddy
Now Falcon. I have to pretend to be a Dodger fan in public at this point. I have to. I have no
Does
other
she
choice.
She know who Ohtani is?
She knows who Ohtani is.
Okay.
I don't know if she knows the pain that Ohtani inflicts on me. I don't right. know if she can connect those dots.
Well, I just
want to
know.
She knows who
like,
Ohtani is.
She looks at a name and thinks, huh? Wait.
Wait, what?
Does
what
she know it's a baseball this? Player?
Like the lake thinking.
Dude, he's
that
the
guy
goat.
Has Omami Ohtani as a tramp.
He's the goat. What do you want from me, man? Nobody's ever done it like this before.
Peekaboo.
We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Dive back into the Blazers. Yeah. Exit interviews are today on the horizon. They're going to begin in about an hour over at One Center Court. We'll start, though, with the Magic Hat, as we always do. Thursday's that kicks off the next hour next, 105.1 FM, The Fam.